iFM, your station of choice since 2008.
Looking very forward to speaking to this lady because you know what, she is seasoned, I think. As delicious as that sounds, she's a South African television, radio and print journalist. She's a news editor. She's a war correspondent. She's based in the Middle East, which gives her a much deeper insight to many journalists who are not based in the Middle East. Her name is Paula Sleer and she joins us right now. Good morning, Paula. How are you?
Good morning, Kathy. Thanks for having me.
It's so wonderful to speak to you. Paula, is there any confirmation yet as to the status of Mr. Saeb Erekat?
No, you know, late last night we started getting reports that he passed away and a couple of media outlets started reporting it. We then heard from one of his sons saying that this was not true. What we know is that he's in a very bad state. He's being treated at Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem. He is COVID positive and he's on a respirator. We know that his family has been called to be at his side. So the prognosis is not good. That's the latest we've heard.
Yeah. What are the implications for Israel if, you know, if he unfortunately does die?
I don't think it's going to be that significant. You know, Saeb Erekat is a well-known personality more overseas and in the international community than in terms of his relevance here vis-a-vis, for example, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and Palestinian politics. He's served as chief Palestinian negotiator for years, so we've often heard his name when it comes to negotiations between the sides. But he wasn't a contender for a future leadership position in terms of being a replacement, for example, for Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, the leader of the Palestinians, the president. And he wasn't a contender for a top Palestinian position other than the position he held. So in terms of the long-term implication of what it means, I don't think it's that significant. However, he has been very vocal in his criticisms against Israel, and that is why there's a lot of comment about the irony that the Palestinian Authority asked Israel to treat him at an Israeli hospital. We've heard from a number of Israeli Knesset members saying it's ironic that a top PLO official accepted treatment in an Israeli hospital even after he endorsed the boycott, disinvestment and sanctions movement. And he was also one of the people who was involved in spreading a libel that Israelis intentionally infect Palestinians with COVID-19. So, for example, there was another comment I saw that in times of personal health danger, the leaders of the PA turned to the help of the Zionists. There was also criticism amongst the Palestinians that he'd received treatment in Israel because, of course, I'm not saying all of them, but they saw this as a betrayal of a man who had for most of his life dedicated himself to representing the Palestinians and speaking out against what they saw were Israeli misbehaviors.
Any idea of who you think would succeed him?
Well, certainly I think you're right that the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, won't be in office for much longer. He's already 84. He's not healthy.
Yeah.
We've also had health scares with him in the past. Now, so far, he's deliberately refrained from naming a successor, and the concerns on the ground have been that chaos will follow his departure because he hasn't named anyone. There's two names that are being bandied about. The one is a person who's supported by top Ramallah officials and also Israeli defense officials have mentioned him, and that is the Palestinian intelligence chief, Major General Majid Faraj. They believe that Faraj, who's 57 years old, is most likely to succeed Abbas. Now, he was named head of the Palestinian General Intelligence Service a while ago, and he has served time in Israeli prisons for carrying out offenses during the First Intifada. The criticism against him, however, is that he has close ties with the Israeli security apparatus. He's got close ties with the Americans. And so you have, for example, Hamas in Gaza accusing him of being a collaborator. But he's one name that's being put forward. The other name is a successor to Abu Mazen, is a name that might be more familiar to listeners, and that's Mohammed Dahlan, who was the leader of Fatah in Gaza. He's currently living in the United Arab Emirates after he was driven out of the Palestinian territories in 2011 over corruption. But certainly when I work in the Palestinian areas and I ask people on the street who they believe will be the next Palestinian president, they believe it will be Dahlan. He enjoys widespread support amongst the Palestinian public. So in that respect, I don't think Erekat is that relevant because he was never one of the names that was being put forward in terms of a future Palestinian president.
Interesting. What amazes me is how, you know, how many leaders are, they seem to be covered in Teflon. You know, there can be all these allegations of corruption and, you know, a long history of it. And yet they still get put forward as leaders. Any insight as to why you think that happens?
Look, it's something that certainly when I talk to Palestinians, they're very aware of that. It's not something that Palestinians will stand up and say, you know, our leaders are completely devoid of any kind of corruption.
Yeah.
In fact, the mood on the Palestinian street is quite strong. I mean, people are very angry with the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas. He lives a very lavish lifestyle. His children are very wealthy, and a lot of young Palestinians who don't have work and who are struggling to put food on the table will say it's not fair. The money, they have an understanding that the money that the international community gives the Palestinians does not always filter down to the people who need it most. When you ask me if I have an understanding of it, I mean, it points to corruption, which unfortunately is something that is widespread and known to be amongst the Palestinian government, that again, the money that the international community is giving is not reaching people on the street. The situation is quite bad in the Palestinian territories. There's a lot of unemployment at the moment. COVID-19 is, as much as it is in Israel, and it's a problem in Israel as well, we are facing we're actually just coming out of a second lockdown. But the figures here are still high. They're also high in the Palestinian territories, and that just exacerbates the situation on the ground. And maybe then again, coming back to Saab Erekat, we don't feel, the feeling on the ground is that there's not much hope that a Palestinian-Israeli breakthrough is going to happen anytime soon. Saab Erekat was one of the voices from the Palestinian Authority who spoke out against Donald Trump's deal of the century, saying that they will not participate in it. And we actually heard from him not so long ago saying that the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden would need to undo the Trump administration's moves regarding Israel in order to restore trust in the Middle East peace process. So certainly no love lost from Erekat and the Palestinians vis-a-vis Trump and what he tried to do with the Israeli-Palestinian peace process.
Yeah. Paula, just before I let you go, I was speaking to Vic Aladef earlier this morning. He's the head of the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies. And every Tuesday morning he speaks to us and he gives us the Australia report. And Australia gives UNRWA $20 million a year. They've halved that because they've said it's not possible that an organization can have 30,000 employees. An organization like UNRWA can have 30,000. It's rife with corruption.
Mm.
And it seems that, you know, reports all around, it seems that sentiment towards the Palestinian people and their plight. And I'm talking about the genuine plight of the genuine people. Sentiment seems to be turning against them. Why do you think that is? Or maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think I'm not sure if the plight is turning against them as much as at the same time people are also tired of the Palestinian issue and are focusing elsewhere. Again, if we come back to Erekat, there was some criticism against him, for example, going to an Israeli hospital. Why didn't he go to a hospital in one of the neighboring Arab countries? And the idea that the Arab countries are not as close to the Palestinians as perhaps the Palestinians would like, or as the Palestinians make out that they are, or as the Arab countries make out that they are.
Yeah.
And so, for example, you had Israel starting new ties with countries like Saudi Arabia. And the reaction amongst the Palestinians was that you're forgetting the Palestinian conflict and you're forgetting about us by building ties with Israel. And so I think it points to your question that particularly for the Palestinians, they worry that as Israel makes these new alliances with the EU, with Saudi Arabia and with Bahrain, the Palestinians are being sidelined. So it's a mixture of the Palestinians being sidelined and no longer the main issue on the international agenda, as so many things are happening, and the issue of the Palestinians, as you say, as their plight kind of being forgotten and people getting angry with it and not wanting to contribute anymore. And I think it's a number of reasons. The Palestinian situation hasn't progressed. And many in the international community, you know, there's that well-known saying, and I think it was Golda Meir who said that the Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. There's growing there's growing frustration that the Palestinians themselves are not forthcoming and willing to do something to actually get themselves out of the situation. And Arab countries are either forgetting about the Palestinian plight, or there's just too many other pressing international issues, so they're not focusing them on anymore. But certainly what you mentioned now in terms of UNRWA, there's a lot of criticism against UNRWA in the region, that the money is used often for salaries and for lavish lifestyles, and that again it doesn't filter down to the people who needs it the most. And so again, you have the pity that the situation in the Palestinian territories is such that you still have many poor people who need this money, but the organizations and the government that's supposed to serve them is not doing an adequate enough job of it, and the money's not filtering down to the people who need it the most.
And in so many cases, that's the story for so many people around the world. Paula Slea, an absolute pleasure, speaking to you. Linda Warren has actually messaged. She said it's such a bonus hearing you, Paula.
she
hasn't heard you in such a long time. She said it's an absolute bonus, and it's very interesting what you're talking about. So thanks,
super.
Linda. Thank you, Paula. And have a
it's
wonderful
a pleasure,
day.
Kathy. Lovely talking. You too.
God
you
bless.
Too.
Take care. Bye bye.